This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to an episode of Banging Book Club. My name's Lucy Moon.
I'm Hannah Witten.
And today we are here with Chidera,
aka the Slum Flower.
Let me check if I know how to pronounce your surname.
You've done for Egaru, yeah.
Okay, great. Just checking. Chidera Egaru, otherwise known as the Slum Flower. And we're here to talk about her new book, What a Time to Be Alone. Which
I love the title of.
Thank I know. You. So good. Is it a play on Drake?
Definitely. Yeah, of course.
Just
it has to be.
You never know. Yes. You never know. And when's it published? Is it out right now?
July 26th.
Okay, so it's a little bit of time till it comes out, but we will just talk about it today because we've both read it.
Yes.
And it's great.
Thank you.
I think it is such a great handbook for young girls, especially, and like young women who are finding their feet. And pretty much, to be honest, anyone who still hasn't embodied those like cool concepts mm-hmm. yet that are so vital to, I think, kind of female survival.
Oh, there's some music.
Yeah, just we're recording in Peckham Levels, so if you can hear some like noise, music, trains, that's what's happening.
This is just the new aesthetic of Banging Book Club. It's like on location.
Yeah,
background noise.
So, first question that I have is, what inspired you to write the book?
So I have spent my early adulthood being quite an angsty person. But the thing is, angst is an emotion that's associated with being a teenager, right? Mm-hmm. You're told you grow out of it or eventually you'll stop feeling that way. But
I never had angst as a teenager. I'm like waiting for it to happen. Really? Maybe in my late 20s.
So were you like relatively peaceful?
I was like goody-goody two-shoes.
Oh my
still
God.
Am. Still am.
Well, that's so nice. Yeah, for me, I was always frustrated with, you know, certain things just being the way they are, and I'd always ask questions and not get answers, or people would treat me a certain way, and I feel like that's not fair, I want justice. And so I just spent my entire adulthood just being really angry. But I felt like, you know what, anger is an emotion that can be useful, because anger is what has created a lot of the change. In fact, all the change that we've seen has come from anger. Someone had to be frustrated enough to be like, I'm not standing for this anymore, I'm gonna rally up and gather people who also believe in what I believe in, and let's form a movement and let's go and create some change out there. And so for me, I think this book has been about, you know, turning the anger into a conversation and allowing other people to feel like someone relates to them, and that their angst or frustration or anger, I should say, isn't crazy, quote unquote.
Yeah. So I feel like in your book there are so many points where like you explain scenarios and you really just like you nail it. In terms of just like describing a way that someone might feel in a certain situation, especially when it's situations where people may not know how to describe it themselves or like be able to put the words to explain how they're feeling or why a certain situation or person makes them feel uncomfortable. Like there was a bit in the book where there was a bit it was so quiet and now it's so noisy.
Yeah, I'm like, this will be fine, right?
It'll be fine. It's like, we had ambulance sirens in our last episode.
Yeah.
There was this bit that really resonated with me where you like described me, which is, if I try and figure out why I dislike people, mm-hmm. it's because either I'm jealous of them, mm-hmm. Or it's because the qualities in them that I dislike are actually the things that I dislike about myself. Mm. And I just know this, like, did you ever watch Laguna Beach?
No, what's Laguna Beach?
It's the Prelude to the Hills.
It's the Prelude to the Hills.
It's like,
so like, you know, Lauren Conrad, the Hills and all that. So before
what created
that,
the Made in Chelsea format,
So Laguna Beach, this shows my age, but like, there was Lauren was like the main character, mm-hmm. even though she's a real person in that. And then there was this other girl in it called Kirsten, mm-hmm. and she was like the antagonist in
yes.
it, even though they're all real people, but she was like portrayed as the antagonist, and I hated her, but it was because she was me.
Like, so there were parts of you that you wanted to change that you just,
I don't know, but you just kind of nailed it in your book. You're like, oh like you. Asking all these questions like, why do you dislike this person? And I'm like, it's because I'm jealous of them, or it's because
yeah,
they are me.
Even jealousy is yeah. an emotion that we're taught to be ashamed of, and yeah. for me I think jealousy is important, because there are people that I till this day feel jealous of, and it's because that they have managed to attain something or achieve something or do something that I'm yet to figure out how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And jealousy isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think where jealousy becomes harmful is when you allow it to influence how you treat other people or how you treat yourself.
Totally.
That's where it becomes a dangerous emotion, because jealousy in itself is just an emotion. I think emotions tend to have power when you allow them to influence your decisions. So it's just, yeah, we're scared of that word.
I think also, like, when you recognize that you're feeling jealous, it's a good time to reflect on, like,
yeah.
why? Okay, what's important to me? Like,
yeah.
Because it makes you realize the things that you want.
Yeah, it's a signal, so. And you should just listen to it.
Yeah, totally. Right. Second question. The book is kind of, I don't know, like, rooted down through Igbo proverbs, which you learned through
yeah.
your mother.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I loved it.
How did you come to bring this into the book? And tell me more about that as a whole in general.
So, I'm Nigerian, which is West Africa, and my Nigerian mother raised me in the Igbo language. So I understand two languages, English and Igbo. Igbo was actually my first language. I was speaking that and went to nursery fully speaking it, and then I just eventually just stopped speaking it, but it's always what I've been raised on. And so,
can you still speak it now? Or do you just kind of understand it?
I can't speak it anymore, but I can outdo Google Translate.
Yeah.
I'm like the Rosetta Stone of Nigeria. Yeah, Igbo, yeah. But, yeah, my mom raised me on a lot of proverbs, and proverbs are really, really important and are treasured heavily in Africa because it's an ancient way of communicating. Proverbs matter because they refer to everyday language, everyday objects, animals, items, so it means that everyone can relate to and understand
mm-hmm.
it. So if you notice, a lot of proverbs refer to animals or like household items like baskets
yeah.
or palm trees. That's because I think when you narrow down a message to, you know, the essentials of what you're trying to communicate, it makes it easier to understand because it's so direct. And so when my mum used to use proverbs to, you know, make me understand concepts, it would make sense straight away because I'm like, yeah, I know what a lizard is. I know that lizards have scales. So of course that's why this thing is happening.
Yeah. Is that the rat and the lizard going
yeah,
out in the rain?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a proverb in the book that in English it's translated that when the rat follows the lizard out into the rain, it's only the rat that gets soaked. And what that means is you've just got to be mindful of the influences that you choose to follow, because a lizard has got like scaly skin, so if it gets wet it can just shake it off and go about its day. But if a rat gets soaked, it's got fur, so it's going to be wet for quite a while.
Yeah.
So you've just got to make sure that the people that you're following or the influences that you welcome into your life, that you have a stronger sense of self, so that if anything, you know, does happen that isn't what you expected, you know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Because you might not respond to things in the same way other people do.
It's similar to the John haircut one.
Yes, yes. There's another proverb that talks about, you know, wanting the same haircut as John, but not having the same headship as John. So, like, a haircut is a hairstyle,
oh,
but
yeah.
Poor John.
John's setting the trends.
That's right, John. You go get your life, John. If you're bowl cut. But yeah, so hairstyles are different and cool, but I guess what makes something work is, you know, the kind of person that's carrying it. So if you're not that person, it might not work for you. So again, it comes back to individualism and figuring out where you stand amongst all the things that you're asking for,
yeah.
which is, again, what my mum raised me on, just being an individual.
Like, your hair is amazing.
Thank
but
you.
But if I tried to do that, like, it wouldn't work, and also it would be cultural appropriation, I think.
I think there are certain things that if you know yourself and if you know what works for you, then you just stick to that, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it comes from self-awareness and understanding, like you said, cultural appropriation, and being aware of where you fit amongst certain things and knowing what is your place. That all comes from self-awareness.
Yeah. Isn't there a podcast called Slay in Your Lane? I just keep seeing this phrase on my Twitter coming up.
Yeah,
and I'm
it's
like,
a
what
new
is
book coming
that?
Out?
Okay.
Oh my god, you have to get it.
Okay.
Slay in Your Lane.
Okay. I just love the title. I'm just like,
it's so
what
great.
Is that?
It's like a Bible for young women who want to go out into the world and just work
okay.
and just be able to have
that. Oh, that sounds great.
So look out for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Speaking of Twitter,
Jadira,
I found you because you're on Twitter and
yes.
because you have an incredible presence on Twitter.
Oh, thank you.
Among other social media, but I just want to know more about your experience of Twitter. Do you think the book is a better way of kind of conveying your message,
definitely.
Or is social media more effective? And like just about that kind of. The relationship between the two, I guess.
So funny
and
enough,
how you find Twitter in general.
Yeah. So funny enough, this book was actually Twitter was what I mainly used to write this book because my Twitter timeline is like a record of how I felt
yeah.
over the course of me having an account. Yeah. So
Jadira does these threads
I
that
do.
Are like similar messages to in the book, but they're like very impassioned and very direct.
Yeah.
And I think that's. Why I like them so much. If I have a friend that's just been through a breakup or a friend that feels dependent on someone.
You send them a thread.
Literally, you wouldn't even believe. I've done it four times now.
Archived.
Yeah, go.
This is the one for breakups.
No, because they're so effective because a woman will read them and have like her self-worth will be on the floor and then she'll just be like, oh.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't even realise.
Mm.
And that blows my mind, but it works. Anyway, sorry, tell me more about your Twitter.
But yes, so the reason why Twitter was really important to me when I was writing this book is because my Twitter is literally like an archive of how I felt. And a lot of the time in life, when you're in a good place, when you're in a better place, you forget what it felt like to be in that dark place you were in.
Mm.
So my Twitter has allowed me to go back to when I was in that dark place and see literally what I wrote when I was feeling how I felt. And I used those moments as references for when I was writing this because I really wanted this book to relate to people who aren't just where I am, people who are where I was, because everyone's in a different stage in life. And for this to be effective, it needs to meet people where they are. And so Twitter for me is a really, really useful tool because, like you said, it allows you to engage with people and put forth ideas that will, you know, give other people an insight into how they're feeling. But I'm really trying to rely less on Twitter now because I think Twitter, as much as it's a community, can be very, very toxic and dangerous.
Okay.
yeah, I'd love to know how you found that experience if you want to talk about
Definitely.
It because I know we've both had our fair share of like bad internet experiences, I guess, with just having like an audience online and
yeah.
having constant unasked for feedback. So, and as someone who says, and I noticed like a lot of YouTubers or a lot of social media people kind of dull down what they say and mute
yeah,
it a little bit
for safety.
Yeah, whereas your purpose is to get louder.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so do you find that a really hard like dichotomy to deal
definitely,
with?
Definitely do find it really hard to deal with because like you were saying about people choosing to dull down, I don't blame them at all. We're in a time when like hypercriticism is at its peak where you can't do anything without people just overly picking it apart without making room for like human nuance, because like in real life you don't see people coming with that same energy like when they do online, like. And also I think the reason why is because again it's the internet, so you have time and room to think about things in more depth and come with your witty responses or just criticize things, but also it's easier to critique things than it is to actually create something. So a lot of the people who do critique YouTubers and writers and, you know, social activists, they do that because it allows them to feel like they've contributed to something. Because a lot of these people, they aren't actually creating anything for themselves.
Yeah.
But what I found on Twitter is that it's not really much of a, it's not a safe place to learn anymore. In real life, we learn by being wrong. And so in real life, it's best to have these really sticky conversations because it allows people to be wrong and be corrected. But once there's an audience, it makes it harder for you to actually learn anything whilst being wrong because people are judging you and telling you that you're wrong and telling
yeah.
you that you're never going to have an opportunity to learn again and telling you that you're a bad person. So there's actually no elbow room for you to recover. It's like you just become irredeemable the one time you make a mistake. And that's dangerous because, I mean, there needs to be a general conversation had about, you know, where we're going with this. Do we want people to be discarded and ostracized, or do we want to create an environment where people can choose to learn from their wrongs in a safe way? People don't really know what they want. They just want to cancel everyone and do the whole we hate you, you're a bad person, and that's it.
I think the other thing that like scares people about that is that like when you're having those conversations in person, you can very easily go back and forth and go, oh yeah, actually no, I take back that thing that I said.
Yeah.
But when you tweet it, even if you then go, back and like do an amend tweet.
Screenshot.
And it's like immortalised. There's one thing that you said, it's like, well, you know, it's the dragging up receipts thing. But when you're having a conversation, like, it's not the same.
No, totally. I was just going to say, I'm finding it really, challenging, I guess, to get over the Kanye stuff, because I'm not going to, I think I'm in the same position as everyone, where I was like, cancel, the element of cancelling someone, I think, is really important because he said really ignorant stuff, but I want there to be a nuanced conversation about it.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want us to just go, we won't talk about him anymore.
Yeah.
But
because the problem with
that's so hard.
When you cancel someone, or you blah 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 is over party or whatever it, whatever the hashtag is tomorrow.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, like whatever happens, when you just kind of go, no, this person is dead to us now, what tends to happen is that person who maybe has some problematic views, but if you called them in and talked to them, it maybe you could like work through ideas. When you ostracize someone, what happens is they double down on their ignorant views.
Yeah.
And
because they already feel irredeemable, so they're like, oh, I mean, you've all decided I'm a bad person, I'm not supposed to be a bad person, what's the point? I'm trying and no one's
seeing. They're feeling attacked, so they're like, well, these people are all horrible, so why would I listen to them? So my views are correct, and then they'll just like
self-affirming
that.
Yeah, with people who say really problematic stuff or have said really problematic stuff really recently, I want us to continue talking about why it's wrong, and like keep that conversation.
And make it less directly about them and their character, and more about why this thing is wrong. Because they're not the only person who thinks in that way. So people think in that way, but they haven't said it.
Yeah, exactly. And also acknowledge people's change over time. And there's so many things,
right. Yeah.
And,
that's
and
why,
it's so difficult.
Yeah, that's definitely why I've changed my approach now online and on Twitter specifically. Like, a lot of time I see a lot of ignorant things appear on my timeline, like people, even people that I follow directly.
Yeah.
But what I've stopped doing is like quote tweeting. You know how you can quote tweet and say something more morally righteous, right? I used to do that, but now I'm like, do you know what? This person thinks this particular way. Me using my large platform to quote tweet them, as much as what I'm going to say might offer them a new perspective that will help them, it's going to have a large audience that will agree with me and make it look like I'm bullying them, and they're not going to take the message in.
Yep.
So I just maybe DM them, or that's if I care about them enough, or I like them enough, or I just scroll past. Like, you don't have to fight every battle, and you don't have to be like, excuse me, this is wrong. Like, because I think Twitter's become this morally, like, moral absolutist place now, where everyone feels pressure to arrive at this finished point. Finished essay with 240 characters.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Because also by quote tweeting people in that way, like, it's like, why are you doing that?
Because it makes you look like you're just posturing yourself. Like,
Like, I'm the one in the right. Like, I'm the one that's really woke. This person.
Yeah. I got more backlash when I started doing that quote tweeting and, like, elevating voices that were really negative. So, like, elevating criticism, not elevating people's, like, my opinions that I agreed with that were more positive.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that for me was a...
You took someone you disagreed with and quote-tweeted them rather than...
Oh, no, someone you agreed with. Someone slagging someone else off. Mm-hmm. I'd quote-tweet that and be like, yeah, I totally agree, this isn't...
Oh.
Instead of, like, now I try and make it... try and rechannel something like a positive
me
opinion
too.
Does that
yeah,
make any
yeah.
sense
completely. That's what I used to do as well, yeah. And I just found that as much as people did agree with me, but then it's like, it's when I put myself in the position of the person that I'm trying to correct or the person I'm trying to, you know, highlight their wrong,
your heart sinks.
Yeah. They're not learning.
No.
I don't learn
exactly.
From people dragging me, like, why are you, can you just chill out?
I'm just like, shut up.
Yeah, because in real life you would not come with that energy. You would be like, okay, I don't really agree with you, but here's why I don't agree. Like, we'd have a more balanced adult conversation. So I think Twitter is not the place to have these fragile conversations. It requires a lot more time.
And when people can vote on them as well, I'm really realizing the power of liking, favoriting, and those kind of upvote equivalents, and how that skews a conversation.
Definitely.
Because people will say to you, oh, it's only one bad comment, and I'll go, yeah, but I've got 100 comments and this one comment has 100 upvotes. So it's basically it's like someone commenting in my brain the same thing 100 times.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree with you.
Very interesting. Do you want to
talk
about
the internet's great.
I also love it. I love it.
I prefer Instagram.
Yeah, I love Instagram.
I'm now gravitating more towards Instagram. I feel like it's more of a community.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, there's just less room for it to be violent, I guess. Like,
yeah. People, for me at least, like, it's got that nice community aspect that we find on YouTube.
Mm.
It's like, it's people who, like, I posted something recently about, like, just so you know, I've got quite a few brand deals coming out.
Was this on Instagram or YouTube?
On Instagram. And everyone was like, get the money. I love it. If I did that on Twitter.
People would be like, why are you bragging?
Yeah.
You fake YouTubers, what you do, it's like, you can't win. No, I literally get that all the time. You're just playing on people's insecurity. You're a fake person.
Oh my God. You're just using
us to get money. We hate, and it's like, but then Instagram is like, wow, I'm so proud of you. I've been following you for ages. You've done so, it's like, oh, you guys.
Yeah. I love that.
Speaking of Instagram and Twitter, should we talk about Saggy Boobs Matter?
Ooh.
Yes, let's.
Would you like to explain what it is first?
Yes, so hashtag Saggy Boobs Matter is a movement that I created to highlight the fact that women's bodies don't exist to be, you know, approved of. We just exist to live in our bodies. Like, we don't have to be likeable or hot or sexy to be deserving of love and respect. And, you know, women's boobs, I feel, are a major issue, because even if they're small, even if they're large, even if they're perky, whatever they are, we still seem to find a problem with them, because we're taught that we are objects to be devoured. And so it means that we spend our lives judging ourselves according to how liked we are, rather than just believing that we're just bodies to be lived in, and that we have perspectives and journeys and experiences to share. And so that's why I want to use the movement to highlight that women are more than just, I don't know, appetizers.
Yeah, totally.
Appetizers. I'm the main meal, damn it, for
that's
myself.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll eat and myself, no.
Yes, if that's possible, yeah. I would.
And Hannah, that resonated with you a lot, right?
I don't know. Well, yeah, because I've got massive boobs. And so, like, seeing...
What size are you?
I am a 30G. Yeah.
I'm a 32E.
I have been a 38H at one point.
Whoa.
Yeah.
There was a point where you were just sick of them. I remember you just being absolutely like...
Because I came off the pill and then I gained weight, and so my boobs got bigger
as
well.
Oh, you came off the pill and you gained weight?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Normally
I know,
the opposite.
I know.
You go on the pill
Bodies,
and you gain
like
new
literally,
boobs.
Yeah. What are hormones? I've no idea.
We don't know what that is.
No.
But, yeah, and then I got ill and lost weight, and then I ended up like... in between
G and H
where I was before, so now I'm like, I don't know.
Do you reckon it's affected your posture in terms of like the weight of the boobs?
I've got a terrible back, and I think it's from something between the big boobs, but then also having a job and a lifestyle that means I'm hunched over a laptop constantly. I don't know which one it is, probably both.
Anytime I catch myself hunching while walking, I'm like, remember to stand straight.
I like crack my back and neck all the time. It's terrible.
Oh my goodness, boob problems.
But I know, I just love that there's like a Saggy Boobs Matter movement. Because it's like, I have saggy boobs, like that's just like my reality, and I'm only 26. Yeah. And it's only downhill from here. But downhill, like...
See, we're taught to think it's downhill.
No, but, like, I mean downhill, like, down. Physically yeah. down, not, like...
It goes further down, honey. Yeah.
My big boobs comes from my mum's side.
Yeah.
And my great-grandmother is still alive. She's, like, 103.
Wow! Yeah. Oh, my goodness! Shout out, great-grandma.
Yeah, shout out to Helen. She... when she's like, I've not actually seen her sat up in ages. Now every time I visit her, she's like lying in bed. But when she's like sat up, her, like, she doesn't wear bras anymore. Like, what's the point, really?
Yeah, but you're 103, live your life.
Like, her boobs are just in her lap.
Just visualize.
And it's just, that's just where they are. And I'm just like, this is my future, I must accept it.
Because it's also like, there's nothing you can do about that, right? It's not like, oh, wear sports bras at night and your boobs won't drop.
Yeah,
like,
don't wear bras at night, that's bad for you.
Yeah, I've seen people like saying things like Marilyn Monroe says she used to wear a bra to sleep to keep herself. Why do we have to keep ourselves, you rarely see men wearing like nutsack bras. They don't even wear nutsack bras because men are allowed to sag and men are allowed to have
they're allowed to have droopy balls.
They're allowed, right, they're allowed to be human, but we're not allowed. We have to constantly be ready to be gazed at. And that's not okay. And like, even saggy is a natural, it's a neutral adjective. It just means something that isn't upright. And so the fact that it's got a negative connotation is what we need to challenge. And that's why I wanted to use the word saggy. Like, I don't feel self-depreciative about describing my boobs as saggy. Like, it's just a word.
Do you wear bras or do you not wear bras? Like, what's your...
Not, I mean, I only wear bras if it's like part of an outfit. You know there's that lingerie, see-through decorative.
Yeah, on your Instagram, you were wearing the bra at an event the other day with like a suit, so it was like an open-ish suit.
Yeah,
like a top. I was like, I don't think I've ever seen Studio wear a bra, but it's clearly forming part of the...
Yeah, it's for an outfit.
Oh,
but
I
for
like
practical
that.
Things, no. I don't really exercise either, and I've had struggles with finding sport. You know about struggle when you're trying to find a sports bra. And
Bravissimo.
It's like, it gives you unnecessary cleavage. It's like, I'm not trying to have cleavage, I'm trying to be held down.
Yeah. But that's the only way.
So how do
you... When you have so much material to work on.
Oh, gosh. So yeah, I don't wear bras. Not because I'm like, ban all bras. No, it's just because I personally just choose not to. And if I choose to, then I choose to. But I'm not even against bras. And I'm not even against boob jobs. I'm just against women being judged for existing. That's what I'm against. And hopefully this movement will, you know, generate a much larger conversation about how we speak about women's bodies. And hopefully be able to highlight that men don't receive that policing. Men get to have, you know, round bellies. Men get to have saggy nutsacks. And they're not judged for that.
That it's even like being celebrated now with like dad bod. Dad bod, go for it.
Yeah,
and it's like,
you should have.
Where's the mum bod?
Even like glorification. Even the beards coming into fashion thing. Like that can be left for like, I don't know.
There's a whole.
We're never gonna get like armpit hair coming into fashion, are we?
There's a whole dating app for people with beards or people who like people with beards.
There's a whole dating app for
I can't remember what it's called. Chidori was just like mouth wide open. Are you into beards?
Yes. Beards are great. I appreciate beards because
I'll need to remember what it is and I'll tell you. I can't remember.
Thank you.
We'll drop in an email.
Yeah. We'll give you that promo.
Yeah. Oh my god. But no, I think saggy beards matter is great, and I think it's also it's kind of like a sister or like a niece to like the body positive.
Yeah.
The like original like radical body positive movement. Mm. I think we're getting more sister and like movements off of it.
And I'm glad that you mentioned the original body positive movement, because what I've been really cautious of is to not refer too much to what I do as like body positivity, and because as much as it is body positivity, the body positivity movement was originally created by, you know, fat dark skinned women who wanted to create room for, you know, fat women to be represented in media and disabled bodies as well to be represented in media as well. So for me, as a, you know, slim cishet attractive woman, I get to benefit.
I love that you included attractive in there, because damn right,
girl, we cute as hell.
Because also, like, in your book, you when you're talking about privilege, you talk about pretty privilege as well, which I don't see many people talking about, but like,
and
that's also a thing.
Privilege of living in a place which isn't a conflict zone. Like, I was like, that is so real, and I don't even consider that as part of my day-to-day.
Yeah, like, I benefit off pretty privilege, and so it doesn't mean that it's why I'm successful, but it's something that has allowed my message to go further. If I was a fat, darker-skinned black woman, I don't think saggy boobs battle would have taken off with the pace that it's taken off with.
Yeah.
Because the world is more receptive to slimmer bodies and prettier bodies. And so it means that I'm really careful about taking up too much space in the body positivity movement, because I already benefit off a world that praises people for being slim. So with that being said, I don't need to be body positive because the world is already positive towards bodies like mine. But what I can do is focus on a particular body part that is shamed, and that's like your boobs, because regardless of whether you're slim, tall, fat, short, if you have boobs, they can be saggy, or you can have hang-ups with your boobs. So that's why I'm focusing mainly on that body part rather than, you know, like posturing myself as a body positive activist. Because as much as what I do is body positive activism, I don't want to, you know, overshadow or speak over those who are doing the more important work, which is about fat and disabled bodies being represented in media.
And it's really refreshing to hear you say how, like, the way you look, you think has helped, like, propel your message further. Because I just hear, like, so many like YouTubers or influencers, when they get asked the question, like, hey, like, you're relatively good looking, like, do you think that's got anything to do with your success? And they're like, no, of course not, I think just people just relate to me because of the content I make. And I'm like, no, obviously
I follow so many people, right, that I find attractive and beautiful, and I found that I'm more receptive to what they're saying because they're beautiful. That doesn't mean that what they're saying is any less smart. Like you, for example, Lucy, I find you very beautiful. And so, and so it meant that when I first came across you, I was like, oh, she's really beautiful, so I followed you. Oh, and then I saw your work and I was like, oh, I like what she does. But you being beautiful was what, that was my first like interaction with you, was seeing your face. And I was like, oh, she's really beautiful, I'm gonna engage with what she's doing. So it doesn't mean that what you're doing is any less substantial. It just means that people are more likely to be drawn to you because you're attractive, and that means you have a much larger audience. It's why models are attractive people, because when you put a product or a message on someone who is attractive, people are more likely to want to look at them, which means they're gonna spend more time listening to them. That's literally it. It doesn't mean that you're any less good at what you do. It just means that you should, you know, consider that as a reason as to why you've gained more success than you would have had if you were less attractive.
And isn't it mad then that even on that, like, the people who have those kind of followings that are partially to do with their appearance then, like, edit and manipulate it and face tune it and all of that stuff. Like, I didn't realise how pervasive that was in fashion blogging until really recently.
Yeah, I've started noticing, like, face tuning.
90%
especially makeup bloggers and fashion bloggers, what I've been noticing.
Smoothing, pulling.
Yeah. Oh, really? Like, so not, because I'd, like, do filters, but I don't know how to do
that. I think it's like, if someone takes a picture by, you know, like, a wall that's got pillars, right, or a brick wall, one thing I notice is if you see the wall kind of shifting and curving, then you can tell it's been altered. Or if you look at, or if someone face tunes, so if they smooth out their skin, you can see an area where it's really smooth, and then suddenly they've got pores elsewhere. It's like, I mean, it sounds crazy and petty, you know, pointing these things out, but it's weird when you're in an industry that's image based, but you're still altering your image and then claiming to be, you know, like, confidence. And that's a bit of a twisted message. But again, it's like, we make decisions out of fear or out of love. It's one or the other. So a lot of times people are scared, and they do want to cover up, and they still do want to hide, and that's fine. But it gets confusing when you're giving out a clashing message of being all about those things, but then you're still altering your images.
Yeah, so being authentic and being relatable.
Yeah.
And then
that's why I used to have Facetune app, and when I realized how it was making me feel the need to edit things, I deleted the app, because I don't want to feel like I should. Like, the internet is edited enough as it is. We are already putting out edited versions of our lives on the internet. We all want to make ourselves look more happy and more successful than we already are. That's just part of how, like, human conditioning has occurred to us. But then, now having to go and edit your photos in terms of, like, altering your skin texture and warping in certain body parts, that's just an extra layer of filtering. So it's like you're being less and less of yourself. And that, for me personally, is just too much. Like, I want to be as much of myself as possible. Obviously the internet doesn't allow us, like we were speaking earlier about nuance and all things, doesn't allow us to be enough of ourselves. So I think that being as much of yourself as possible, you'll find actually that if you're someone with a large platform and you're being yourself, people will still love you, you know, like you can take that risk of being yourself and people will still be drawn to you.
I've always found, like, the greatest antidote to, like, all of our qualms with social media is just, like, hanging out with my friends in person.
Oh my gosh,
like,
yes.
The amount of, like, stress-free, fun environment that is. I'm just like, oh, this is easy. These are a bunch of people who I love and they love me, and we can just, like, hang out and forget to post pictures.
Honestly.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And that, to me, is, like, I just,
you don't have to
having
overthink.
That balance is really important.
You don't have to overthink how that text came across, because you're in person, you can just ask, what do you mean? And you can see the facial expression.
Yeah, no,
like,
totally.
All these things, it just adds up. But yeah, I feel like I just hope we never forget the value of human interaction in real life. Because as much as I do still love the internet, and I do think social media is such an amazing tool, like without social media, I don't think we would have, the three of us would have been sat here today, we wouldn't have met.
Nope.
No way.
Yeah. Because our paths would have crossed maybe much later. Yeah. But I just feel like, as much as social media has its negatives, it's still really, really positive as well. Like, it allows people to develop a sense of identity. I've been able to learn so many things and have conversations with groups of people that I might not ever interact with, and that's so important. It's aided me in having a more rounded understanding of other people. And so I do think, as much as social media is bad, it can be effective if you just make sure to make room for real interactions offline as well.
Definitely. I think on that note, I think we'll close it up.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, no, thanks so for joining us. Oh. So, What a Time to Be Alone is out.
July 26th. Woo! Available in all good bookshops worldwide.
Not the bad bookshops.
Not the bad bookshops.
Is there such thing as a bad bookshop? I don't think so.
Yeah. No.
Follow Stira on @TheSunflower. Yay. Pretty much every social media site.
Thank you.
Yeah. And in July for Banging Book Club, we're reading Beauty Queens.
Yes.
Ooh. By Libba Bray? Oh, I can't remember her name.
I don't know.
We literally looked this up yesterday. Anyway, it's Beauty
about,
Queens.
It's about, it's like Lord of the Flies, you know, Lord of the Flies.
Like,
but it's beauty. Yeah, it's like a pageant. They get stranded on an island. We're really excited.
Oh my gosh.
So
we're reading that this month.
Okay. And then follow us on @BangingBookClub on Instagram and Twitter.
Yes.
And then we will see you next month.
Bye.
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 Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.